tainted water to reach the prison complex and return with the captain. There, Keith said. It's in sight. Do you see? Meta peered through the thick window at the underwater world. All she saw was gloomy murk. Not much sunlight made it through the ice.
No, Keith said. Don't look out there, but here.
He tapped a radar screen with a green glowing dot. The blue triangle on the screen was their mini-sub approaching the complex.
Are you sure our friend or foe signal is working?
Meta asked.
If our signal doesn't match, the complex will launch torpedoes at us.
Don't sweat it, love. Everything is under control.
One thing about Keith, he always had an optimistic outlook. Meta wondered sometimes if she should try for the same thing. She smiled at the pilot, nodding.
This is going to work, she said.
That's the spirit, Keith told her.
No more doom and gloom for you. Now,
we have a problem,
the hollow image Ludendorff said. Meta jerked around in surprise. The hollow image was supposed to be with Maddox. Why had it returned? She peered at the ghostly form with distrust. Maybe the others had faith in the fake professor, but she didn't.
What's the situation? Keith asked. Why are you back?
The authorities have used gas on Captain Maddox,
the hollow image said.
He's unconscious in his cell.
Meta swore under her breath. She'd known something was going to go wrong.
Given these circumstances,
the hollow image said,
we must abort. I dare not risk Star Watch capturing my engrams.
Meta glanced at a strange device in the back of the cabin. The androids had brought it with them. Apparently, the hollow image Ludendorff stored its AI engrams in there, projecting the hollow image of the snotty professor a certain distance and no more. She had figured that to be 100 kilometers, which gave the hollow image quite a range. Meta was sure the device was builder tech of the First Order, but it was signature Ludendorff to come up with something like that. He had been pulling stuff out of his rear since the day she'd met him. Why not a nifty little engram-holding box that could project a hollow image?
We're not aborting the mission, Keith informed the hollow image. They have our captain, and we're going to set him free, as in right now.
Negative,
the hollow image said.
I demand you turn back.
Meta had been waiting for something screwy to occur. She powered up the gloves so they purred with exoskeleton strength.
And since you are too emotionally invested in the rescue to calculate the odds correctly,
the hollow image said,
I am enforcing my desire.
Keith turned around. The two androids stood up, drawing small laser pistols, aiming them at the pilot. Keith shook his head.
You're not seriously trying this.
Reverse direction,
the hollow image Ludendorff said.
We will attempt a rescue at another date.
Yeah, right, Keith said. Once we've lost the element of surprise.
Meta whirled around. She was closer to the androids than Keith was. They began to target her. She grabbed an android hand in each power glove and squeezed, crumpling each weapon and each android hand. They attempted to react. She heaved, tossing the androids onto the deck. With lethal precision, Meta attacked the first one, disabling it with her power gloves.
Stop at once, the hollow image said. They are irreplaceable.
The second android sat up, glanced at its ruined hand, and reached for a knife with its good one. Meta didn't give the android time to complete the maneuver. With the gloves and swift hand chops, she smashed the pseudo-man back onto the deck. Then she destroyed the face, deactivating it forever in a shower of sparks.
What have you done?
The hollow image cried.
They were the last ones.
Meta stood, her heart thudding with a rush of adrenaline.
If you don't shut up and do exactly as I say, I'm going to smash your little box next. That will deactivate you. Is that something you really want?
The ghostly image studied her.
You are a bloodthirsty maiden, and you have ensured the mission's ultimate failure. We needed the androids as commandos.
Keith and I can do that,
Meta said.
Count me out, the pilot said. I'm not swimming in that radioactive soup.
I'll do this myself, then,
Meta said.
And you're going to show me the way in the facility, she told the hollow image. And if you're thinking of saying no, realize that I'll purge your box for good if you disagree.
This is blackmail,
the hollow image said.
I'm glad you understand me, Meta said. It will save time. Keith, how long until we're ready to launch?
Keith grinned as he shook his head in admiration.
You do realize they know we're coming?
Meta shrugged. She was still charged from the fight, yet there was a small part of her, the reasonable part, that told her this was suicide. If the others knew they were coming, couldn't they override the FOE signal and launch the complex's torpedoes at them?
If you're game, so am I, Keith said.
Then he glanced meaningfully at the hollow image.
We're going to hit them 1-2.
Meta nodded thoughtfully.
What does that mean?
The hollow image asked, who glanced at each of them in turn.
Did you just use a coded phrase to hide your real intention from me?
Meta snorted as she opened and closed her power gloves. The AI in the box was almost as smart as the real Ludendorff. It had guessed right about Keith's coded phrase just now. Galleon had suspected possible treachery on the hollow image's part. Thus, they had a plan B, which was what they were about to implement now. Still, would that stop the others from launching torpedoes? Lieutenant Noonan's right hand hovered over the activation switch. She was on the starship's bridge in the commander's chair with Galleon to her left. The ad-hoc AI watched her. Had his probability analyzer predicted each of her possible actions? Galleon had been right about several critical factors already. The AI had guessed the invisible hollow image would be caught talking to Maddox, and that the prison authorities would gas the captain afterward. Galleon had also predicted the AI Ludendorff's reaction to all that.
The AI has acted with self-preservation utmost in mind, Galleon had said.
Valerie tried to understand that. The AI computer with Ludendorff's engrams believed its primary motivation was self-preservation. Galleon had explained his reasoning, of course. The Ludendorff AI was builder tech, which the hidden aliens absolutely did not want duplicated by primitive humans. Did that mean the builders were behind this? Or did it mean the real Ludendorff had been unable to disconnect that part of the box's programming?
You have already committed yourself to the rescue, Galleon told her.
Valerie turned toward him.
You must know that I am correct, Galleon said.
Do you remember what I told you about bragging?
Valerie asked in a dispirited tone.
I do, Galleon said. But that is not germane to your next decision. You must activate the emergency protocol. Anything else will lead to ugly problems we do not want on our consciences.
You have a conscience?
Valerie asked. The hollow image ad-hoc appeared troubled.
That is an unkind dig, Valerie. Why do you attempt to cause me grief? For 6,000 years... I'm sorry, Galleon. I shouldn't have asked that. I'm nervous. I worked hard to get to this position. I hate the idea of throwing everything away by disobeying Star Watch.
Delaying making a decision is still a decision. If you do not act promptly, Captain Maddox, Second Lieutenant Maker, and Meta will all be imprisoned, possibly for the rest of their lives.
Valerie tapped the switch before sagging against the commander's chair, listening to a klaxon blare.
It started, she whispered. There's no going back now.
Yes, Galleon said. Is it not exciting?
Valerie looked up at the main screen. The scattered islands of Greenland were directly below the starship. For the past few days, Valerie had delicately altered the vessel's course so the starship would be at this location as if by accident. The klaxon continued to wail. The few remaining islands of Greenland disappeared from the screen. The handsome, worried face of Dr. Clifford appeared. He was in the main disruptor cannon chamber. The doctor ran a hand through his wavy blonde hair.
Lieutenant, what seems to be the problem? What's the emergency?
Valerie found that she couldn't breathe. She didn't want to say this. Straightening, she said in a strained voice,
You and your team must activate the starship immediately.
Dr. Clifford frowned.
I thought there wasn't supposed to be any danger in Earth orbit.
I know, Valerie said. I thought so too. It's the reactors. A strange gas has begun to leak from their aft chambers.
If you seal the bulkheads, we should all be safe, Clifford told her.
Under normal circumstances, I would agree with you. But since none of us anticipated the danger, I keep wondering what else is going to go wrong that we weren't aware of.
But,
Please, Dr. Clifford, you must hurry to the shuttle.
No, he said. I'm going to stay at my post, and...
Valerie took another breath.
This is an order, Doctor. I am ordering you and your team to evacuate at once.
Suspicion swam in his blue eyes. The doctor was as good-looking as they came, but it didn't mean he was stupid. He would need another nudge.
The home fleet is already on high alert, Valerie lied. Look, if it helps you.
Galleon sent Dr. Clifford a carefully edited video of Star Watch battleships closing in on Victory. It was old footage from the Oort cloud a couple of years ago. When Dr. Clifford reappeared on the screen, the man had become pale.
I'm on my way to the shuttle, Lieutenant. Will you be joining us? I'll use the next shuttle, Valerie said. There's one more procedure I want to attempt. I have to go now. Goodbye, Dr. Clifford. It's been a pleasure working with you.
You say that as if we won't see each other again. I'll see you in an hour.
Valerie forced a pained smile.
Yes, an hour. Two at most. Until then, Dr. Clifford.
She cut the connection, feeling more remote than before the call. Galleon stared off into space. It meant he was looking through the starship sensors.
I'm almost in position.
Valerie looked up.
Can you really do this?
Theoretically, it should be no problem.
That wasn't the question.
No, Galleon said. It was not. I suppose we are going to find out soon enough if I can do this. In 10 seconds, I shall begin the insertion code. Meta settled a full-face mask over her features. The idea of swimming in irradiated seawater troubled her. It was going to be cold, too. The suit was supposed to protect her from the harsh cold, but reality often proved different from theory. The craft lurched. She staggered, striking her shin against a bench.
We're in position, Keith radioed into her ear.
Roger,
Meta said. She entered a tiny chamber, turning a wheel. A light flashed and seawater began to gurgle around her ankles. She stared down at the liquid. It rose fast. She closed her eyes, telling herself this was no problem. It would not take long.
Don't think about the pressure. All the water over your head ready to squeeze you into pulp.
Meta opened her eyes and gave a small yelp.
What's wrong?
Keith asked. Meta couldn't speak. She stared at the water sloshing around her mask. This was just like spacewalking, right? So why was she freaking out about it already? This would be easy, easy, totally easy.
Meta?
Keith asked.
I'm here,
she sounding angry.
My board is showing that your chamber is flooded. It's time to go.
Yeah,
Meta whispered. She activated a switch. The outer hatch opened. Meta grabbed the edges and pulled herself through. She was in Arctic water. With a switch, she activated her pack. It surged with power, propelling her toward a massive structure. Lights glared around it, a prison for some of the worst offenders on the planet.
Easy does it,
Keith said into her ears.
Yeah, yeah, that's easy for you to say, snug in the sub.
Meta knew that was an unkind thought. Several years ago, Keith had come down with Maddox onto Loki Prime, the worst prison planet in the Commonwealth. They had rescued her from a much worse situation than this. It had been a long and interesting road since then, including time spent with Kane, an agent of the new men who had kidnapped her and taken her into C Quadrant.
Better slow down, Keith said over the comm. You'll smash into the outer hatch. You're going too fast.
Meta shivered, realizing she'd been daydreaming. Wasn't that one of the dangers of deep diving? This was quite different from spacewalking. Water resisted her efforts. She slowed down as a hatch loomed before her. Getting into the prison, the hatch opened. Meta grinned inside her diving mask. Maybe this was going to work after all. Galleon had opened the hatch, at least. The AI was supposed to have hacked into the complex's main computer. If it wasn't Galleon helping her... Meta growled under her breath, kicking her feet, propelling herself into a chamber. The decisive moment was upon her. Meta hurried through the silent corridors. No one moved in the underwater complex. On the upper left of her mask appeared a small schematic of the prison. She followed the outline in red. She had a laser pistol, which she most certainly would use.
Maybe it would be wrong to kill the Star Watch Marines in here, but Meta didn't plan to go back to a prison planet ever. No one had better get in her way today. She wore body armor and—
There's trouble,
Keith said into her earphones.
What are you picking up?
She asked.
Someone is moving in there. Either that or my motion detector is off. How far are they from me?
Meta asked.
You're not going to meet them right away, but it looks as if the person is headed for the captain's cell. He must know why you're there.
It's definitely a he?
Meta asked.
Don't know about that, but you have to expect him to be armed.
Roger,
Meta said. She increased her pace.
Is he wearing a gas mask?
That seems like the best answer, Keith said. That means you're dealing with a smart one. He must have seen the others dropping around him and realized we were gassing everyone, or that Galleon was using their own security system against them.
Great,
Meta said. She had a nasty thought. What if this smart guy put a gun to the captain's head and threatened to shoot him? That was the one way to stop the rescue attempt cold. Meta swore under her breath as she began to run. Chapter 15. Major Stokes stumbled through the corridors. He wore a gas mask, as Meta had supposed. The Brigadier had been right to suspect Victory's old crew. Given that, the Iron Lady should have locked every one of them away. Sure, those people had done magnificently in the past, but that didn't mean they got a free ride whenever they felt like it. One had to obey orders. Without rules, a society turned into competing tribes, and a military became a useless mob. Star Watch would never defeat the new men if Maddox and his people fell into an obvious trap. How could any of them be so soft-headed as to fall for the Ludendorff Hollow Image? Clearly, Strand used the Hollow Image to lure the ancient starship to a place where he could board and capture it. The new men had tried that at Wolf Prime. Gaining victory would tip the military balance to the enemy. On no account could Stokes let that happen.
It's up to me to save the day. I can't let my humanitarianism throw away our greatest advantage. I'm sorry, Captain Maddox, and whoever is trying to rescue you, I'm simply not going to let that happen.
Stokes was a muscle-bound soldier. He was lean, smoked too much, and was maybe a little too old for games like this. But he trusted his mind, which he believed was one of the sharpest in intelligence. If that wasn't so, the Brigadier wouldn't trust his judgment to the extent she did. Maybe the others coming had the advantage in a purely tactical combat sense. He was trickier, though, and in the end, that was going to win down here. The Major drew a gun as a grim sense of rightness hardened his resolve. If he had to, he would shoot the captain in cold blood. It wouldn't be because he held any ill will toward the man. He rather admired the other's resourcefulness. No, he would kill Captain Maddox because humanity's fate might well rest on him doing so. Meta raced around a corner, seeing an open cell door down the corridor. According to the schematic, it was the captain's cell. A hard knot squeezed within her stomach. The other had beaten her to the prize. What should she do?
I know you're out there, a man shouted from within the cell. I have a gun pressed against the captain's skull. If I see you appear in front of the door, I'll fire.
I'm wearing body armor,
Meta shouted.
We both know I won't shoot at you, but at him.
If you do that, I'll kill you next.
Yes, I suspected as much. That isn't my preference, naturally, but so be it. I am an officer of Star Watch Intelligence, and I will do my duty to ensure mankind's survival.
And if Captain Maddox is correct in his assessment?
Meta asked.
I'm willing to bet the Brigadier is correct.
Maddox hasn't been wrong yet,
Meta said.
He's clever, I'll grant you that. But I've told you my resolve. It isn't going to change.
Who are you?
It doesn't matter. I'm guessing you're Meta?
It doesn't matter,
she shouted back.
I see. Well, make your choice, young lady. I've already made mine.
Keith,
Meta whispered.
I heard him,
the second lieutenant said into her earphones.
It's checkmate, she whispered.
Maybe, Keith said.
You have another idea?
I'm sending over the Hollow Image, Keith said. Maybe it can think of something.
Meta shook her head. She didn't trust the alien AI that pretended to have the engrams of Ludendorff. It The hollow image materialized before her.
The second lieutenant tells me we have a situation.
Meta stared at the ghostly apparition, then slowly she explained the stalemate.
The answer is obvious, the hollow image said. I'm amazed you haven't already seen it.
I haven't, Meta said, hating the thing more than ever.
Now that you're committed, I'll give you the answer. Use the revitalizing gas. The captain's metabolism causes him to recover faster than ordinary. He will then overcome the major for you. I don't know, Meta said. That means everyone else will wake up down here.
None of that is going to work, Keith said in Meta's headphones. I just called the starship. Galleon told me there is no revitalizing gas.
Meta squinted at the hollow image. She told it what Keith had just told her.
You deliberately tried to trick me. Nonsense, the Ludendorff hollow image said. What aren't you telling me? Meta asked. Is the captain coming too on his own?
The hollow image hesitated before saying,
I'm surprised at you. You have reached the correct conclusion. Why not tell me in the first place?
Meta! The major shouted from the cell.
Yes, she called.
Either you leave or surrender to me, the major shouted. If you don't do either, I'm going to shoot the captain and be done with it.
Stokes was silent for a moment.
What's it going to be, Meta?
Meta glanced at the Ludendorff hollow image.
You must keep the major talking, the hollow image whispered. The captain must hear that as he comes to. Otherwise, Maddox will give his awakening away to Stokes and the major will kill him.
Meta shook her head. This was an impossible situation. Just once, she would like everything to work easily. In the cell, Captain Maddox was already coming to. His mind was groggy and his body felt weak, and he recognized the feeling as similar to what had happened to him at the Lin Ru Hotel, the Spacer Embassy. But that had... He heard Meta, and he almost called out to her. At the last moment, he felt the cold barrel of a gun pressed against his left temple. What was happening? By slow degrees, as he kept himself motionless, Maddox realized he was in his cell underwater in the Greenland archipelago. The gunman answered Meta, and Maddox realized Major Stokes held him captive.
All right, Meta shouted. I'm leaving. Just let the captain be. He has nothing to do with this.
Maddox could feel some of the tension ease from Stokes, but the major didn't take the gun from his head.
I know you're awake,
Stokes told him quietly. Maddox opened his eyes, staring up at the major.
I thought you would have tried something before this,
the major said.
Are you really going to kill me?
Maddox asked. Stokes just stared at him.
You don't like me, do you?
Maddox said.
No, I never have. You're a hybrid. As far as I can tell, you're a sleeper agent for the new men.
That's why I've helped Star Watch time and again? Maddox asked.
It's a mystery, I admit.
Stokes appeared thoughtful.
Maybe I should make this easy for both of us.
Outright murder?
Maddox asked.
That doesn't seem like you.
Stokes gave him the tiniest of grins. Maddox tried to interpret it. He realized Stokes wasn't speaking to him. Well, he was, but the words were for someone else. Yes, of course, he spoke for the benefit of the invisible hollow image. That must be how Meta had gained her intelligence of the situation in the cell.
This time, you're wrong, Captain, the major said. Surely you can see that.
You say that because of the Xerxes system?
No, because of the Shanghai androids and the hollow image, Stokes said. And
the hollow image solidified in the cell.
I have a message for you,
the ghostly Ludendorff said. Stokes swore and thumbed back the hammer of the pistol. Maddox convulsed mightily, surging against the major. The gun went off. The ignition was deafening to Maddox. The bullet singed the side of his head in passing. He tried to grapple with the major. The gun lined up so it aimed between his eyes. Then a spear of red laser light struck Stokes' firing hand. The major cried out in agony, releasing the gun. Both Maddox and Stokes stood up at the same time. Meta clanked into the cell in her body armor, the laser aimed at Stokes. The major cradled his smoking hand as blood dripped from it.
"You fired at him," Meta said, who still wore her mask.
"Sorry, old boy," Stokes told Maddox.
The captain barely heard the words. His ears were still ringing from the shot.
"It was nothing personal," the major added.
"It felt personal to me,"
Maddox said too loudly because he wasn't hearing so well.
"I'd like to convince you to stay," Stokes said.
Maddox had an intense desire to slug the major. Instead, he shook his head. Taking the gun, he put it between his belt.
"You won't make it to the starship," Stokes said.
"Maybe not,"
Maddox told him.
"And even if you do, you'll never make it out of the solar system. Star Watch can't afford victory falling into enemy hands."
"Goodbye, Major," Maddox said. "Tell the Brigadier I had to do this. I'll take every precaution concerning the starship."
"No, you won't," Stokes said. "You're an adrenaline junkie. I think all the new men are, and the lot of you are all too arrogant by far."
"Well, half of me is too arrogant anyway," Maddox said.
"I don't believe you're going to like what you find out there,"
Stokes said. "I'm not sure I like what I've found here."
Maddox turned to Meta.
"Thanks for coming.
Let's go."
"What about him?"
she asked, pointing at Stokes.
Maddox stared at the major who had just tried to murder him.
"We'll lock the cell. I think that will give us enough time."
Meta hesitated, looking as if she wanted to fire the laser one more time. Finally, she nodded, saying,
"Okay, but we'd better hurry. The Major is right about one thing. All of Star Watch will be gunning for us. We don't have much time to get upstairs to victory and out of the solar system."
Chapter 16 Keith watched the two swimming through the radioactive water. Meta had succeeded. She was bringing Captain Maddox to the submersible. Once more, it was the team against everyone else. The minutes ticked by. Would you look at this? Keith studied the radar chart. There were attack submarines out here. That was fast work. Someone must have been anticipating that they would try something at the Greenland complex. Did the subs belong to Star Watch, or had the Ludendorff box set up something for another play? Galleon had suggested they beware the builder box. The ADOC's probability analyzer suggested the person or people behind the box might be someone other than the real Ludendorff trapped in the Xerxes system. They would be foolish to trust the hollow image fully.
"Come on," Keith said, watching the two swimmers. "You've already taken too long."
Captain Maddox swam strongly, doing his best to keep up with Meta. Her jet-propelled pack was making that difficult. Meta looked back.
"Take my hand," she said through the full face mask comm. "I'm only going at half speed, and we have to go faster."
"Right," Maddox said. He kicked harder, grabbed her hand, and felt her squeeze, the pressure from her power gloves nearly crushing his hand.
"Oh, sorry,"
she said, looking back at him a moment later.
"My pressure indicator shows... Is your hand okay?"
She adjusted the gloves to release some of the pressure.
"Never mind about that,"
the captain said. He had been applying considerable squeeze to his hand to keep the bones from breaking. A burst of thrust from her pack had them zooming through the murky water. Soon they reached the submersible's hatch, entering an air cycler, the water draining away from the chamber and a harsh spray decontaminating their suits.
"This could get rough,"
Keith said through the earphones. The pilot immediately proved true to his word. The room tilted crazily as Maddox reached for the inner handle. He felt himself slipping and lunged, his fingers barely grabbing the metal in time. Meta wasn't so lucky. The room tilted and speed threw her so she crashed against one side and slammed against Maddox next. He grabbed her one-armed and opened the hatch. They tumbled into a larger chamber as the craft continued to jig wildly. There were no gravity dampeners in the submersible to dull the sudden moves. Blood flowed from Meta's nose as she groaned.
Maddox dragged her to a bench, hooking his feet and tightening his hold of Meta. Now the cabin tilted the other way and half-spun. Increasing speed threatened Maddox's grip.
"He's crazy," Meta muttered.
"Which means we might make it," Maddox told her. The ride continued this way for a time. Finally, the chamber leveled out, which presumably meant so had the craft. Keith confirmed the news by saying over an intercom,
"Okay, it's safe. I hope you two are all right."
"Roger," Maddox said.
"Do we have time to come forward?"
"Sure, mate," Keith said.
Maddox cleared his throat.
"I mean, Captain, sir."
"Let's go," Maddox told Meta, handing her a cloth. She wiped the blood from her nose. With Meta in tow, Maddox hurried into a short corridor and saw the hollow image waving them toward a particular hatch. Moments later, Maddox strapped himself to a chair beside Keith. Meta sat down at the weapons board.
"Glad to have you aboard, sir,"
Keith said with his focus glued onto a battle screen. "Trouble?" Maddox asked. He saw three fast attack submarines giving chase on the screen.
"Just a mite, sir," Keith said. "But nothing a tactical wizard like me can't handle."
"What happened to all our decoys?"
Meta said as she checked her weapons board.
"I already used them up, don't you know," Keith said. "The boys behind us have been firing torpedoes like candy. I'm surprised you haven't felt the explosions."
"What does that even mean?"
Meta asked.
"That galleon had better know what he's doing," Keith said. "Hang on now, I'm going to give them a performance they'll never forget."
The submersible went sideways and Keith increased speed yet again.
"They're launching torpedoes," Meta said.
"They're right on schedule then," Keith told her. "And that's why I'm headed for that underwater grotto below."
Maddox touched the powder burn on the side of his head. Major Stokes had actually tried to kill him. The Brigadier must be serious about his incarceration. The attack submarines coming after them would kill them too if they could. The knowledge left a hollow feeling in the captain's stomach. After all that he had done, Star Watch still didn't trust him. If the Brigadier could do this to him, who would stick up for him?
"No one,"
Maddox whispered.
"What's that, sir?"
Keith asked while focusing on a screen. Maddox pondered his conclusion. He was a hybrid. He glanced at Keith, nodding. Here was one regular human who would go to the wall for him. Meta didn't count in that regard. She was a genetic experiment, meaning she was just as much in his camp as a new man would be.
"This is pure genius on my part," Keith informed him. "Are you ready, sir?"
Maddox pursed his lips. The submersible corkscrewed as Keith took them through a ring of rock. Something banged against the craft's side, though, causing a horrible metallic screeching that didn't seem to end. The sound snapped Maddox out of his reverie. He stared at a bulkhead, waiting, waiting. Finally, the terrible screech ended. They were all right. Through the grotto. Just as Maddox thought that, water burst through a seam in a bulkhead. Meta shouted in surprise as water sprayed in forcefully. Keith gave the breach a quick glance, muttered something, and tapped his board. He did this several times. It didn't seem to help or change anything. Water hosed into the cabin. The icy liquid swept up items, banging them against the other bulkhead. The green-colored water kept pouring in at a fantastic rate. Maddox kicked his feet, sloshing them through the rising water.
"That is bad," Meta said. "The water is radioactive. If it doesn't drown us first, we'll be irradiated to death."
"Hang on," Keith said. "We're not out of it yet."
Maddox glanced at the pilot's screen. A blossom indicated an exploding torpedo behind them against the rock of the grotto. Other bright dots showed even more explosions.
"I did that part perfectly," Keith said. "The torpedoes missed us."
While that was true, seconds later, the craft shuddered as the increased pressure from the explosions struck the submersible. A metallic tearing sound meant something burst apart. Then, twice the volume of water poured into the main cabin.
"We're going to drown," Meta shouted.
Maddox was already on his feet. He surged through the swirling water, wading to an emergency repair unit on the wall.
"We have no choice now," Keith said. "It's time to go up. Hang on, Captain, sir. I'm changing course."
Maddox barely did so in time, grabbing the wall unit. The submersible tilted violently upward as water continued to gush into the cabin. In a wave, the mass washed against Meta as the water flowed to the back of the sub, adding more weight by the second.
"Come on, you bastard," Keith told the sub. "Give me more thrust."
He tapped his board. From the bulkhead, Maddox stared at the water still pouring in. They had a few bare minutes before they were flooded and drowned.
"Level the craft," Maddox said in a commanding voice. "I have to patch the hole."
Keith glanced at him before shaking his head.
"I'm sorry, sir, but that's a buggering bad idea."
"Second Lieutenant," Maddox barked,
"you will—" "Hang on, sir. Give me 20 more seconds."
Maddox hung on, silently fuming. Still, in these kinds of situations, no one was better than Keith Maker, so Maddox waited to see what the ace had up his sleeve. 25 seconds later, the submersible lurched onto the surface like a flopping whale. It banged hard against the waves, shaking Maddox loose from his hold. He toppled into the water.
"Now, sir," Keith said, "if we don't repair the breach fast, we're going to run out of air."
That didn't sound right, but it confirmed to Maddox that Keith had an idea he wasn't tracking yet. The captain surged to his feet, grabbing the emergency repair kit.
"We'd better move from our location," Meta said, barely able to peer at her board. It was only an inch above the waterline. "There's another spread of torpedoes coming our way."
"Galleon, come in! Galleon!"
Keith said into the comm unit.
"You have to start us upstairs, mate. You have to do it now, or we're dead."
Maddox only listened with half an ear. He wrestled the kit to the breech. As he pressed it against the bulkhead, the submersible lurched once more. The room tilted back and forth. The captain glanced out the forward window and blinked in amazement. The submersible was in the air and rising.
"That's Victory's tractor beam, sir," Keith explained.
"We came in down under to fool Star Watch, and we're escaping through the atmosphere. The unexpectedness of our moves might give us the edge we need to make it onto the starship."
Maddox nodded thoughtfully. Then he finished his hasty repair, sloshing through the water, replacing the empty repair kit. Finally, soaking wet, he returned to his spot near the pilot buckling in. Keith had auto-opened some hatches, causing the water to drain away faster than it had come in. He tapped his board. The hatches closed with loud clangs.
"Yes," Maddox said. "I like the plan. It was well thought out and executed, Second Lieutenant."
"Boom,"
Meta said. Maddox glanced back at her.
"The torpedoes have exploded on the surface," she said, staring at her board. "Let's hope the attack subs don't have any missiles."
"I wouldn't worry about the subs or their missiles," Keith said. "The air interceptors heading our way are going to be the real problem."
Chapter 17. Far away in Geneva, Brigadier O'Hara stood beside the Lord High Admiral. Cook was a big man, red-faced, with thick white hair and a white uniform. They both studied a large screen, with various personnel around the room at monitoring stations. On the screen, a damaged submersible increased speed as it floated upward toward space.
"Clever," Cook said, "but it won't be any match for the interceptors."
"I'm beginning to wonder if that's wise, sir,"
O'Hara said. The large admiral glanced at her.
"You'd better speak quickly, Brigadier. In half a minute, the pilots will launch their ordnance."
"Victory is in play now," O'Hara said. "We tried to stop that from happening and failed. I believe the difference changes the equation. If the ADOC AI sees us kill Captain Maddox..."
"Yes," Cook said. "I see your drift. We cannot afford its displeasure and possible anger."
With his thick fingers, he motioned to an alert colonel nearby. She spoke rapidly to the interceptor pilots, forbidding them to launch.
"Should we call the captain?" Cook said. "Maybe he would be open to reason."
"We're far past reason," the brigadier said. "I spoke to Major Stokes a minute ago. He admits to attempting to kill the captain."
"You're fond of the captain, I believe,"
Cook said after a moment. The brigadier nodded.
"This Major Stokes..."
"Acted on his own in this," O'Hara said. "I wish he wouldn't have fired, but I understand his reasoning. Loyalty to Star Watch motivated him."
"Still," Cook said, "this is Captain Maddox we're talking about. He has many detractors for sound reasons, I believe. At times, you're the only one who has backed him."
"I still back him."
"Then why let him go like this?" Cook asked. "Won't he be disillusioned with us?"
The Brigadier took her time answering. She watched the submersible reach the stratosphere, continuing for space and victory in orbit.
"I'm afraid for our side," she said. "The Builders and Ludendorff and Strand?"
She shook her head.
"Ever since the destroyer almost annihilated Earth, I've been wondering about the wider universe. I don't know if we're going to get the chance to build up enough to withstand the challenges out there."
"You're thinking too far ahead," Cook said in a chiding voice. "First, we must defend humanity against the runaway new men. We're well on our way to doing that."
"I agree. But what if there are worse things out there? How would we defend ourselves against several destroyers, for instance?"
"That's a legitimate question," Cook said. "The answer is that I don't know right now."
"Neither do I," the Brigadier said.
"So your point is..."
"Maybe Captain Maddox has the right idea. We have the new wave harmonics shields, antimatter missiles, and ground-based fusion cannon. Those are pluses. We have greater industrial capacity, meaning, if we had the time, we can build masses more ships and those new cannons. But will that prove enough against whatever surprises the new men have in store for us?"
"Do they have any more surprises?" Cook asked.
"You're making my point for me, sir. We lack knowledge. I suggest that means we need Professor Ludendorff, and we need his understanding now. It's true that I don't want to risk my boy, risk Captain Maddox, and yet another hazardous mission. I'm afraid I'll never see him again. I'm afraid we might lose Starship Victory. I intensely dislike rolling the dice against fate. For a long time, I have believed we should do this the old-fashioned way, by outbuilding our enemy. Now I've begun to doubt myself. If only we knew more about the new men and their full capabilities. That knowledge Captain Maddox is seeking, and it may be the edge we need. There is one other critical point. We can't afford to alienate the Adok AI.
"I understand your thinking," Cook said. "Your captain is forcing our hand, I admit. What I don't fathom is why you aren't willing to say goodbye and wish him luck." The Brigadier forced herself to remain stoic and dry-eyed. She wasn't going to let the Lord High Admiral see her eyes turn red.
"I have a gut feeling about this, sir,"
O'Hara whispered. "Go on," he said. "Tell me about this feeling."
"I think this time..."
O'Hara had to pause, biting her lip so it wouldn't tremble. Once the danger had passed, she said,
"I think this time the captain is going to need bitter determination in order to succeed. I can't say why I feel this. It's just there, sir."
She broke off, weakly. "Do you think it is a mother's feeling?"
"Please, Admiral,"
O'Hara whispered. Cook waited for her to add a true denial. Finally, the large old man put his hands behind his back, staring at the screen. The submersible had left the blue-tinted atmosphere behind as it headed for a double, oval-shaped warship higher up in space. "We should be able to stop Victory from leaving, but it might cost us half our battleships. We can't afford any losses, not after sending so many ships to the Grand Fleet." The old man sighed. "I dearly hope you're right about this, Brigadier."
"Yes, sir,"
O'Hara whispered.
"So do I."
Chapter 18. Sometime later, Captain Maddox settled into the commander's chair on Victory's bridge. He had run from the hangar bay where the submersible now rested. The sprint had left him breathing slightly harder than normal.
"Welcome back, sir,"
Valerie said.
"It's good to be back," Maddox told her.
The lieutenant sat at weapons, a panting Keith slid into the pilot's chair, and Galleon stood watching.
"I take it Dana and Riker are aboard?" Maddox said.
"Yes, sir," Valerie said. "We're all aboard, and this time it's just the six of us."
I'm surprised the security team isn't on Victory.
There used to be, Valerie said. I used a Maddox maneuver to clear the starship a little over an hour ago.
The captain raised an eyebrow.
I see.
Upon the submersible's landing in the hangar bay, the starship had immediately begun to accelerate, breaking out of Earth orbit. Victory did so with Luna Base on the other side of the planet, keeping the Earth between them and the huge railguns on the moon.
Where are the nearest battleships? Maddox asked.
I don't understand this, Valerie said, who studied her board. None of the battleships, no Star Watch vessels, have begun acceleration toward us. I don't even see any sign of planetary defense attempting to gain lock-on against us. High Command can't be under any illusion about what we plan to do.
Maddox put an elbow on an armrest and his chin on his fist. He thought about that.
Any ideas, Galleon? The captain asked.
I lack sufficient data for a reasonable analysis, the ad hoc AI said.
It fits with what we've seen since leaving the Greenland archipelago, Maddox said. In the atmosphere, the interceptors could have engaged. I doubt they held back for our sakes. The powder burn on the side of his head still stung too much for him to forget it. Stokes's shot hadn't been fake, but all too real.
That leaves only one possibility.
He turned to Galleon.
The difference is you.
Me?
The AI asked.
Yes, Maddox said. Would you take it badly if you saw Star Watch obliterate my vessel with me in it?
Galleon didn't hesitate.
Most certainly I would, Captain.
That must be the answer, Maddox said. I'm guessing the Lord High Admiral decided to let us go. I'm sure they don't like it, but they're not going to risk openly upsetting Star Watch's best answer to defeating the new men.
Sounds plausible to me, Keith said.
That puts a heavy responsibility on us, Valerie said. We can't let anyone else gain control of Victory.
The lieutenant became thoughtful.
But if you're right, sir, why aren't they talking to us?
Maddox had been wondering the same thing. He now said,
If they talk to us, they'll either have to order us back or give us permission to go. They don't agree with our agenda, so they're going to go with the fiction that we're renegades.
What fiction? Valerie asked. We are renegades. We fought against our own people. I can't say I'm happy with that, sir.
Maddox stared at the main screen.
There is another possibility, Galleon said. They could be trying to lull you, Captain, while attempting an unforeseen maneuver.
Right, Maddox said. He thought a moment and then clapped his hands, startling Valerie. We're leaving under combat conditions. We will not assume anything. That means we'll use the star drive to jump out of the system. We're going to use our greater speed to get us to the Xerxes system before Star Watch can send a message to Port Admiral Hayes. That way, we can use the Port Admiral's help in the Xerxes system instead of having him fight against us.
What are we going to do once we have Professor Ludendorff? Valerie asked.
Return him to Earth, Maddox said.
Surrendering ourselves to the authorities? Valerie asked.
Maddox looked away as he said, That's my plan, Lieutenant. Each of you will have to decide for yourself whether you'll join me in my surrender.
So this may be our last mission together, Valerie said.
Maddox hadn't thought that far ahead. He nodded.
Yes, that's a good possibility.
I do not agree, Galleon said. If your first theory is correct, that my agreeability is desirable to Star Watch, then you may have many more voyages left.
I call that a splendid point, Keith said, grinning. We didn't know it the first time going out, but we know it now. We've become the indispensable team.
Maddox found that hard to believe with the throbbing powder burn. Stokes had tried to kill him, and the Major had been acting under the Brigadier's orders. Despite their success in reaching Victory, a pang of loneliness touched him. He wondered if that feeling would ever go away. The more he thought about that,
Lieutenant, Maddox said,
I want you to open channels with Star Watch headquarters.
Valerie gave him a quizzical stare, but finally nodded slowly.
I've opened channels, she said, tapping her board. But no one is responding, sir.
Maddox cleared his throat.
Lord High Admiral, he began. This is Captain Maddox speaking. I'm taking Starship Victory to the Xerxes system. I will aid Port Admiral Hayes if I am able. My primary objective is to free Professor Ludendorff
and return with him to Earth. At that point, I will surrender to your authority. If you feel it is necessary to put me back in the Greenland prison..." Maddox could not force out the next words. What did he owe Star Watch? What did he owe the Commonwealth? Did his loyalty to them mean he would accept an indignity they put on him? He had served Star Watch and the Commonwealth loyally for years. He had risked his life for both. Didn't Star Watch and the Commonwealth owe him something? Was it a soldier's lot to obey any command, no matter what it was? No, Captain Maddox did not believe that. A man had a higher duty to perform than following immoral orders. If Star Watch wronged him, he had an obligation to himself and to the truth to right that wrong. In this case, the ultimate objective was to protect humanity from oblivion, from extinction. If Star Watch acted in such a way as to ensure humanity's end, he owed it to the future of man to do the right thing. Normally, a lowly captain obeyed the higher authority because without order, chaos ruled. Realistically, the higher authority should have greater knowledge. In this instance, he could make a case that he had greater knowledge than Star Watch. Was he being presumptuous, thinking this? Not if he was right. Thus, to surrender to Star Watch for making the correct decision, that sounded foolish. I do not plan to play the fool with anyone. "Let me amend my last point," Maddox said. "My plan is to return with Professor Ludendorff so Star Watch can make the best decision regarding human survival. I realize you would like me to apologize for taking such a high-handed approach in this. However, I found victory for you, coaxed the starship to aid humanity, and helped to defeat the first new man invasion of C Quadrant. I also defeated the alien destroyer. I believe I have earned the right to attempt this mission. I believe Star Watch made a critical mistake putting me in the Greenland complex. Frankly, Lord High Admiral, Star Watch acted in an ungrateful manner toward me, and I resent that." Keith laughed as he pumped a fist. "I've never heard anyone tweak High Command's nose better than you are now, mate. I mean, Captain, sir." "Furthermore," Maddox said while ignoring the ace. Valerie clicked a switch.
"Captain," she said, "I think you've said enough."
Maddox drew a breath. Before he could speak his mind to her, a red light flashed on Valerie's board. He pointed at it. Hesitantly, Valerie tapped her panel.
It's the Lord High Admiral, Captain."
"Good," Maddox said. "Put him through." Valerie gave him a meaningful glance before tapping her board. The main screen shimmered. Then, old Admiral Cook appeared, staring at Maddox with flashing eyes.
"I hope your gall serves you well, young man," Cook said. "This is a reckless mission, and you're absconding with Earth's best chance to defeat the new men. We need those ancient ad hoc technologies in the coming conflict."
"Sir," Maddox said, "if our scientists haven't cracked them yet, I don't think they're going to in the foreseeable future."
"Do not seek to lecture me, Captain,"
the Lord High Admiral said, locking stares with Maddox. The captain saw genuine anger there, and for once, it daunted him. Who was he to take on the entirety of Star Watch? At that moment, Maddox knew something about himself. He did this for more than the truth. He had a duty to his mother, to the woman who had risked everything to save a small boy from the new men. Behind everything, he sensed her courage, the fire in her heart to do the right thing for her unborn son. He was going to honor that.
"I don't mean to lecture you, sir," Maddox said. "You gave me a task several years ago. I'm simply trying to finish the job, sir."
"If you mean to return to Earth with victory..."
"That's right, sir. Returning with victory against the new men. This time, I don't mean the starship, but winning the war. I've been with Professor Ludendorff. That causes me to worry about Strand. The new men have deep knowledge, sir. We need that knowledge if we're going to defeat them. Maybe my hybrid nature lets me see that truth a little more clearly than others."
"Now see here, Captain.
The new men are better than us, sir. We have an edge, but I don't think that will be enough to beat off their next attempt, not with Strand helping them."
"Are you not aware," Cook said,
that Strand and the new men appear to be at odds with each other.
I am, sir. But given their situation, I suspect they will reunite and work together until regular humanity is defeated.
That's the new man side of me speaking, sir. As I said, I have a greater insight into the enemy's mindset because I share some of it. You trusted me before, sir, with the highest stakes. I'm asking you to trust me again.
The Lord High Admiral's features hardened into a flinty look.
Your exploits have unhinged your thinking, Captain. You are not as smart or as important as you seem to think.
The powder burn still stung. That kept Maddox from backing down.
I am ordering you. Valerie cut the connection with a click. The image of the Lord High Admiral vanished from the main screen, replaced by a dot of Mars in the far distance.
Shouldn't we be jumping soon, sir? Valerie asked, pale-faced and with shaking hands.
Maybe she couldn't believe what she had just done. Maddox studied her, surprised by her daring. This Valerie was different from the one he remembered. She appeared to have absorbed some of the lessons of their last voyage. He nodded. The extent of his words and actions just now began to settle in. This time, more than ever before, he was going for broke. If he was wrong, I'll cross that bridge when the time comes.
A day later, as the starship skirted the Tau Ceti system, Captain Maddox jogged around the vast area of the hangar bay, burning off excess energy. He had been doing some deep thinking regarding the Builder AI box. A moment later, Galleon appeared beside him. That startled Maddox, but he hid it, nodding a greeting.
"May I speak with you, Captain?"
Galleon asked. "Of course," Maddox said as he ran. He noticed the hollow image floating even with him.
I would prefer if you ran beside me. The floating is a bit disconcerting."
"Oh," Galleon said. The small Adok moved its legs as if running.
"Is that better, sir?"
"Much," Maddox said. "You said you wish to talk with me?"
"I've been processing old memories for quite some time. The extra computing power Dana found has given me these memories and the ability to sort and accept them. However, I am having trouble with one particular set."
Galleon glanced at the captain.
"Perhaps I should not bother you with my personal problems."
"It's no problem," Maddox said. "We're always coming to you for help. I would be honored if you let me help you."
"Quid pro quo?" asked Galleon.
"That isn't how I meant it to sound. We're
family, sir."
"Yes," Maddox said.
"Can an Adok be part of a human family?"
Maddox ran for a time without answering.
"We're a strange group. A half-breed, a welfare kid, a former drunk." "You should not disparage yourself, sir.
What I'm saying is that you are one of us."
"I'm not sure I welcome the comparison, sir."
"Oh," Maddox said, glancing at the hollow image. It surprised him to see a brooding Galleon, his owl-like eyes more intense than usual.
"Maybe the better way is to say that we are each unique, and you are the most unique among us."
The two beings ran in silence after that, circling the hangar bay once.
"I'm not sure where to begin, sir," Galleon said.
"I have time."
"That is kind of you."
"What's wrong?" Maddox asked. A wistful note entered Galleon's robotic voice.
"When I was flesh and blood, in the days my homeworld existed, I had a wonderful mate. She loved me, and I loved her. We united our flesh, hoping for a large family. After several years, we learned that she could not bear children. Oh, she wanted offspring so badly. She began working in the creches, teaching the youngest their first lessons. I tried to persuade her otherwise. Seeing the young every day tormented her, but they also gave her joy."
"That is sad," Maddox said after Galleon had fallen silent.
"You must understand," Galleon said as if Maddox hadn't commented, "that I came from one of the oldest lines of honor on the planet. I did not have any siblings. I was the last of a glorious line. But I would never pass on my genes to the future. It used to trouble me. Perhaps that is why I strove so hard." I believed that I would be the last of my line. Thus, I tried to be the noblest and the grandest.
Galleon glanced at Maddox.
Is it not strange, sir? I now am the last, but not in the manner that I envisioned it. I am the sole representative of an ancient and glorious race. I did not have to trouble myself about offspring, because no Adok would have them.
Maddox did not know what to say.
I miss my mate, Galleon said quietly.
Yes, Maddox said.
I am having trouble equalizing these ideas. It helps me to be part of a new family, sir. I am alone in the universe, and yet I am part of a group. We aid each other. Is that not so, sir?
It is, Maddox said. If it helps, I am glad to call you my friend and my brother.
We are brothers.
Maddox glanced at the small Adok with his faint lines crisscrossing his leathery skin. Was it possible to feel loyalty to a computer-generated personality? The captain decided it was.
Yes, Galleon. You and I are no longer alone. We are brothers who help each other. We have each other's back.
That is an idiom, sir.
A human can't watch his own back. He needs a friend to watch it for him.
I perceive the idiom.